You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
July the 16th, 2020, Russians apparently involved in trying to deal with our country again at Russian collusion. Not reference Trump in the campaign, but supposedly intel sources with U.S., U.K., and Canada claim Russian hackers have been trying to get into information involving coronavirus vaccine development. Look for more actions on those stories coming down the road. Did you know that no Democrat presidential candidate in the last 20 years, two decades, not one Democrat presidential candidate has won the senior vote? Kind of surprising, isn't it? Well, Vice President Biden, former Vice President Biden, and the DNC, Democrat National Committee, plan to change that. They're launching a push to court voters 65 and older with a new TV commercial running in key general election battleground states. They're going to focus on that Biden cares about you. Biden can relate. I can't wait to see some of those. By the way, we do have a coronavirus vaccine trials underway in different places, and one of them involving the National Institutes of Health and Moderna. And Dr. Fauci says what he's seen so far on the possibility of a vaccine, he says, no matter how you slice it, this is good news on what I've seen so far. In San Francisco, they were trying to get the homeless off the streets during the coronavirus outbreak. Remember that? They were putting them in hotels. There's an update on that story I want to share with you a little bit later in this hour. But also, you had many of the homeless simply pitching tents in various locations. And now San Fran is being sued by a law school and residents and businesses in one area, saying homeless people are everywhere in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic. Everything is unsanitary, unsafe, and impassable. Listen, it was that way before coronavirus. Drug needles, defecation, urine. Welcome to San Francisco. Senator Schumer is presenting a $350 billion plan to tackle what he calls systemic racism and historic underinvestment in communities of color, especially those hit hardest by the coronavirus pandemic. Trump was helping them and providing jobs until we got hit with that. But now Senator Schumer says, oh, I got a bill that I think this will help. I think you're pandering again, Senator Schumer. North Carolina city of Asheville, moving forward, apologizing for its historic role in slavery and now offering reparations. This will not be direct payments, but mandating investments in areas where black residents face disparities in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll get into that in more detail in the next hour. I'm sorry, during this next hour. In the meantime, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy introducing legislation meant to shield statues targeted by protesters. He wants to prevent state and local governments from allowing this to happen. If they're not going to protect the monuments, what he's going to do is not let state and local governments not get any federal grants. The bill is titled Protect America Statues Act of 2020. He says public monuments are indispensable. They tell the American story. It's wrong to erase our history. The National Association of Police Organizations endorsing President Trump in this election. The Department of Homeland Security acting secretary says in Portland, the politicians have allowed a mob to besiege that city for more than 6 weeks for 47 straight days and nights. Lawless anarchists destroy and desecrate property, including the federal courthouse, and attack the brave law enforcement officers trying to protect it. Local businesses in Portland, by the way, have reported $23 million in losses due to looting and rioting. So much for peaceful protesting. 23 million in losses. Those that stay will see their insurance rates escalate. Berkeley, California has a decision. They want to eliminate their police department. They're certainly going to cut the budget by 50%, and they're going to tell police officers, we will not use you anymore for traffic stops. We'll have civilian city workers go out and make traffic stops. Somebody speeding, somebody making a wrong turn without a signal, maybe driving reckless, maybe driving intoxicated. A civilian employee will stop the car, I don't know how, and then walk up and say, cease and desist. Do you see anything good coming of that scenario in Berkeley?
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, have been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along where the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime.
Yes, that's Lynn Anderson from her hit song, I Never Promised You a Rose Garden, her 1970 signature recording. Because I'm watching the mainstream media still continue to attack Trump for what happened in the Rose Garden the other day. Now, I reported extensively for you yesterday how the mainstream media CNN team went absolutely bonkers over it. How CNN's Jim Acosta said, Trump soiled, he soiled the Rose Garden with that performance. He said, presidents do not use a rose garden in that kind of naked political fashion. That was not a press conference, as the White House described it. It was a campaign rally disguised as a press conference. It was a bait and switch. Accosting Acosta Acosta. He knows the difference between bait and switch. They do it every time on CNN and NNN. Breaking news, breaking news. I heard that story 7 hours ago. You tune in 2 hours later, still breaking news, breaking news. Now I've heard it 9 hours. You think that's bait and switch? Of course it is. And he's supposed to be a White House journalist, and he does not think that any president, that no president, I should say, before Trump has ever made any political statements or remarks while in the Rose Garden, and that everything he does in the Rose Garden has nothing to do with politics. Are you kidding? Everything the president does has to do with politics and what they can do to make things better. When they pardon the turkey, whether it be on the South Lawn or if he decided to do it in the Rose Garden, is that not being political as well? Of course it is. But Anderson, I should say, Jim Acosta, accosting Acosta on CNN, he was ranting, absolutely ranting about it. and Anderson Cooper, Anderson Cottonmouth. Also, of course, billed as a news anchor, has moderated presidential debates. He made remarks about Trump saying that, you know, here's they all came to watch this artificially tan man. That's a jab, and you know it is. We played some of those yesterday, but again, Cooper also said we should not accept or expect anything but this kind of attitude from this president. Shouldn't surprise us. And then he found a reason to mock Trump in some way, that the way he tends to breathe. And then Cottonmouth had the audacity to add a line, watching Trump with that odd thing with his nose when he sucks in air very loudly, none of it surprises us. That's how far we have fallen. How far we have fallen, that'd be you, Anderson Cottonmouth. Newsbusters managing editor said that rant by Cooper was, quote, predictably sophomoric commentary masquerading as journalism, feigning outrage. All because Trump had an event planned in the Rose Garden to talk about China and Hong Kong. And he did, and then he decided to go off on a tangent. He's the president. He doesn't have to stick to anybody's script. He can make any determination he wants. And in fact, many times when the president's out there going to deal only with this issue, you watch how many times reporters throw questions at him that has nothing to do with the issue. They want to get something for their material and their listeners or readers on something else. They are entitled to change the subject. The president can't. If you say we're going to have this meeting in the Rose Garden, talk about China and Hong Kong, then damn well you better stick to it, right? That's their attitude. Well, I told you how we saw the response from CNN and NNN yesterday. I want to give you some more. I mean, this is hilarious in many ways. And it reinforces the difference between real news and idiocy passing for, quote, journalism. I spent 50-plus years as a news anchor. And when I'm telling you, I know how they take things and change them around and make it where it's going to be a story even when it's not. I know of what I speak. And I came up through a time when a news anchor was not supposed to indicate any bias whatsoever, and I didn't. Some might think I did, but that's fine. That's their opinion. I can rest knowing that I didn't. If I had politicians on both sides accusing me of being in the other's pocket, well, then that was fine. So the Trump campaign communications director, Tim Murtaugh, was on MSNBC Live, hosted by Chuck Todd and Katie Turr. Oh, by the way, while they're just talking to Tim Murtaugh, you talk about being a brilliant communications guy. If they're going to shoot him and he's being interviewed, he chooses a place he sets up. And behind him is a constant streaming message, Trump-Pence 2020, Trump-Pence 2020. Keeps going across. And there's no way they can take an interview with him on TV and not see it. Oh, he had them. But here came Katie Turr. She was among those so upset because Trump didn't follow the rules the other day in the Rose Garden. Here we go. Listen to Katie Turr as we begin.
The president responded to Joe Biden's economic and climate plan yesterday by having an event in the Rose Garden. Are we going to see more of that, where a Rose Garden event is disguised as a campaign event since the president is not able to hold those big rallies?
The outrage expressed by the media over the president's remarks yesterday. But let's talk about what's actually going on. The media and Democrats and Joe Biden, they don't like it when the president tweets. They don't want him to be holding rallies. They don't want him to communicate with Americans. They don't want him to speak at Mount Rushmore, of all places. And now they don't want him to hold press conferences. You know, Joe Biden will read a speech from a teleprompter a couple of times a week and spend every word attacking President Trump. And the president is one who likes to fight back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, Lynn Anderson. I'm going to hear some more of that before we wrap up this segment. Never promised you a rose garden, but all you idiot reporters that you call yourselves reporters and correspondents for the mainstream media gathering in the Rose Garden, you didn't get what you wanted. Well, they never promised you a rose garden with what you wanted. So let's go back to some of this interview. And actually, it's not just an interview. It's an attempt to assassinate and attack Trump via his communication director, his director, Tim Murtaugh. So once again, Katie Turr, well, I just can't accept what you told me. I mean, Trump changed the rules. Listen, please.
It was supposed to be about Hong Kong. He touched on Hong Kong for a moment and then went off and started talking about a variety of different subjects. A lot of it just was not correct. Are you saying that wasn't a campaign event?
I'm saying that the president is one who's going to fight back. I think if you're going to, there's not one reporter who covers this president who could possibly say they don't have access to him and the ability to ask him questions. Joe Biden went 89 days between holding press conferences, and in that time, the president took questions from groups of reporters 55 times during the space of that 89 days.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden.
Quentin, thanks for putting that. That's so good. I never promised you a Rose Garden news conference that you wanted. Oh, well, we're not done. Oh, no, we're not done. When I get into one of these, why start trying to show and expose to you how the mainstream media wants to dictate what the news is, and it's not really news, it's their opinion, and you're supposed to take it just like a baby being fed pablum. Just take it. Don't spit it back out. Swallow that stuff. Go with it. So I want to go back to, once again, to this interview between Katie Turr and Chuck Todd, also as a host on MSNBC Live, as they're talking to Trump campaign communications director Tim Murtaugh. Now, the thing you're going to hear here in a moment, the very first thing you're going to hear from Katie Murtaugh is that We're out of time, and thank you for coming. And then she spends a 54-second monologue after she told him, we're out of time, don't have time to hear anything else from you. She spends 54 seconds yapping. Then there's a pause, and they switch back to Chuck Todd to break for the commercial. Total time from when she says we're out of time is a minute 14. And when you hear this entire final exchange, when Katie Turr finally finishes her monologue, it's hard to hear, but Trump communication director Murtaugh says sarcastically, I appreciate that speech, Katie. And then Todd says a funny. Well, he's trying to be funny. He's trying to be serious, actually. He says, newscasts on MSNBC in the daytime have no editorial point of view. Yeah, an absolute lie. All right, I've set it up for you. Watch how he's trying to answer some questions. They're not getting what they want from him, and he's got this thing behind him all the time while he's on their screen. There's wording going behind Murtaugh, the communication director for Trump, a little sign saying Trump Pence 2020. And if they're going to have him on air, they can't get away from it because he set it up for them that way. So they're trying to shut it down and say we're out of time, but by the time they get around to being done, well, just listen.
Tim Murtaugh, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us. We will note the president is the only one having indoor rallies or events of that scale in the entire country. Again, the protests were outdoors. All of the doctors and health experts say that that is a safer place to hold them. I attended a number of those rallies. Everybody was wearing a mask. Hand sanitizer was handed out. And we just saw the images of those rallies. People were not wearing masks inside the president's rally. There was not social distancing being practiced. We saw the signs being removed from seats. So you can say you handed out hand sanitizer and gave out masks. They weren't wearing them. And also, Dr. Fauci today has said that the incubation period for this disease could be longer than just 2 weeks. So, Tim Murtaugh, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate all of your time.
Chuck, over to you. I appreciate that speech, Katie. Thank you.
We will have the brand new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll will be unveiled today at 5 p.m. on Meet the Press Daily. And just a reminder, for what it's worth, there is no editorial point of view here on any of these newscasts on MSNBC in the daytime.
You are so full of it. How do you think, Chuck Todd, that you can be doing your commentary on your program later, or any of the rest of you guys, you're doing your commentary, quote, in your evening programs, but when I'm anchoring a newscast, there is no editorial opinion. You carry that baggage wherever you go. Are you so stupid that you don't realize that? Listen, if I had come out as a news anchor and said, I'm strong conservative, I'm a Harley rider, I'm a Marine, I'm a gun owner, I'm anti-abortion, I'm for, you know, all the things that many conservatives buy into, and then I said, but when I'm on the news, I'm absolutely an honest person, no editorial. Well, folks who knew me, they knew my basic views. Folks who didn't, just knew me from the screen, well, they thought they knew, but they didn't know. But you carry the baggage with you. But for Chuck Todd to sit there and say, our newscasts do not have that. Well, once again, Lynn Anderson, help us out here.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden.
All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with repatriations and one city. Stand by, please.
When you take, you gotta give. So live and let live, or let go. I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden. I could promise you things like big diamond rings. Don't find roses growing on stalks of clover.
Drinking dog whiskey, telling white lies. One leads to another on a Saturday night. Don't you cross your heart unless you hold the dime. Drinking dog whiskey, telling white lies.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Quinn gave me that little nod. Yeah, Larry, I know you like that song. I do. Thanks, Quinn. When we had the Civil War winding down in 1865, General Sherman made a promise that would come to be known as 40 Acres and a Mule, redistributing a huge tract of Atlantic coastline to black Americans recently freed from bondage. President Abraham Lincoln and Congress approved it, and soon 40,000 freed men in the South started to plant and build. Within months of Lincoln's assassination, President Johnson rescinded the order, returned the land to its former owners. Congress made another attempt at compensation, but Johnson vetoed it. And since that time, we've had numerous efforts along the line pushing for repatriation. Now decades and generations past 1865. That doesn't mean it's less of a concern or an issue for many. But it also means many around today had nothing to do with anything that happened then. But still, the bigger issue that comes with many who are pushing for repatriation is, maybe I wasn't involved in slavery as either a slave owner or a slave, nor were my parents or even my grandparents, but this country was built upon the back of slave labor. And that a lot of things that happened in the country were built by slaves. And in fact, a quote came from a city councilman in Asheville, North Carolina, a black member of that council, saying, "Hundreds of years of black blood spilled that basically fills the cup we drink from today." This is not something to just be dismissed, but when you look at things realistically, where and how would you do it? And there are much bigger arguments going on here. In fact, I'm going to have to extend some of this over into the next segment as well. But repatriations is not a new thing. And in fact, in 2016, there had been a survey, and that might be one of the more recent, a Marist poll, and it found, not surprisingly, a majority of black Americans supported reparations. A majority of whites rejected it. That's no surprise in many ways. Maybe what is somewhat of a surprise is that not all black Americans questioned about it, favored it, or wanted it. The issue raises not just money issues, but moral, social, political considerations, obviously. You had a manifesto issued by the Black Panther Party in 1969 calling for white churches and Jewish synagogues to pay for projects like a black university and a southern land bank. The manifesto issued by the Black Panthers at the time, "We helped build the most industrial country in the world at the same time that, quote, racist white America has exploited our resources, our minds, our bodies, our labor." Now, as I mentioned, in North Carolina, the Asheville City Council took a vote 7-0 to come up with a repatriation program. How's it going to go down? Who's going to be involved? How's it going to be administered? And will that spark an issue across the nation for either other cities and our counties or states or a national reparation? How much money would be involved? And does it really bring justice or just a buyout? Stay with us.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
When it's over, so let's say, it'll rain a sunny day. I know, shining down like water. I won't know, have you ever seen the rain?
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Let me reset the table for us again as we're talking about repatriation and what's happened in Asheville, North Carolina. First of all, keep in mind there is a piece of legislation, H.R. 40, that's included actually in the Biden-Sanders Unity Task Force proposal, which states Democrats commit to the important first step of supporting H.R. 40, which would establish a commission to examine how the legacy of 246 years of slavery, another century of Jim Crow segregation, continues to impact the economic prospects of black Americans today and to recommend remedies. And of course, we've also had Congresswoman Tlaib and Presley express their support for repatriations. And we've had some of the other would-be Democrat presidential candidates express the same. And of course, Congressman Sheila Jackson Lee, has a commission to study and develop repatriation proposals. That's part of the H.R. 40. And now coming to what happened yesterday with the resolution passed by the Asheville, North Carolina City Council. To begin with, they passed an apology for their historic role in slavery and discrimination, and then did vote to provide reparations, stating in behalf of one councilman, "It's simply not enough to remove statues. Black people in this country are dealing with issues that are systemic in nature." So what are they going to do? They're not going to be handing out money, not directly. The priorities would include efforts to increase minority home ownership, access to affordable housing, minority business ownership. Also mentioned strategies to close the gaps in health care, education, and pay. Now, exactly how that's going to be done, well, there you get into the fine details in print. And a lot of the things I just listed, if banks are looking to, you know, get involved and bring in some money, and federal dollars are there as well for things like that to make sure to increase minority home ownership. We've done that all across the nation in different ways. Try to provide affordable housing, obviously, helping minority business ownership. That's all good. Not just limited to black Americans, but to any American, regardless of color. And I'll remind you, the latest census is indicating it will not be too long before Caucasians are no longer the major race in the nation. It will be Hispanics, then Caucasians, and then black. will repatriations accomplish anything of what they're hoping? It's a political football at this point, and sometimes used to pander to get votes, and sometimes folks are absolutely sincere. But how they're going to do it, they still don't know. And how much would it cost? How much would it cost on a national basis? The estimates I have seen, I'm looking at one piece right now that says a fair value would be anywhere between $1.4 trillion to $4.7 trillion, something like $142,000. Or let me move it to the most recent numbers of 2019, $153,000 for every black American living today. Not a family, every black American, $153,000, one-time payment. But that was 1.4 to 4.7 trillion. Others are saying, no, you're looking at something like 51 trillion, 51 trillion. The numbers are all over the place. And again, will it make things right? We make things right by never going back to that. And I think we make things right by remembering that history, not tearing down the statues. But that's me. But I will tell you, another civil rights leader, Bayard Rustin, and his response. He said, if my great-grandfather picked cotton for 50 years, then he may deserve some money, my great-grandfather. But he's dead and gone, and nobody owes me anything. Not every black American will accept the statement of that civil rights leader. But his attitude is, I was not a slave. I was not harmed by it. If my great-grandfather was, so be it. But the money would go to him, and he's not here anymore. That's pretty much an argument of those against it, be they white or black. But there's truly disparity that happened even after the slaves were free. We know that. Jim Crow laws, other issues, banking and credit laws, all of that is true. If there's some way to do it and really unify the country, but I don't see it based on what's being presented by the Democrats at this time. And when you look at what you have with some of the liberals, they're always looking to just hand out money and make things happen so it looks like we're accomplishing something when in fact they're not. They know they're not, but it looks good and it works for the next election cycle. Remember the issue with San Francisco, the homeless. It's not just San Francisco, but that's been a classic example of how bad that city went downhill, that pristine city, a tourist attraction. Suddenly no one wanted to go. They were canceling conventions and so forth long before the COVID-19 issue. But because of all the homeless on the streets and popping up tent cities on every street and urinating and defecating wherever they chose and dropping their drug needles here and there. And in fact, now a law school and residents and businesses in the inner city Tenderloin district are arguing in a lawsuit, sidewalks unsanitary, unsafe, often impassable, because of so many tents, tripling since January, as homeless shelters are forced to operate at low capacity because of social distancing. So they filed this lawsuit. If you recall, though, even before the COVID-19 came in the effort to try to get some of the folks off the street, some of the liberal cities in California were looking at commandeering rooms, if necessary, in hotels, but saying, we will pay you something. And then when COVID-19 happened, when a lot of folks were not going to hotels because travel got shut down and hotels had to lay off staff and everything, then a decision was made by some governments, city governments. Well, here's a chance to put the homeless inside those facilities, get them off the streets because of COVID-19, and help with separation. Well, I saw a report filed for Fox News about a situation that they've had in Seattle when it came to the homeless. Please listen.
Cities and counties across the country have moved thousands of homeless people off the streets and mainly out of crowded shelters and into hotel rooms to try to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Last week, we saw 200 people bust to this Red Lion Hotel in Renton, Washington. They had all been staying in two homeless shelters in Seattle. They don't have the virus or any symptoms, but are considered vulnerable, so this is how they will comply with the order to keep a social distance from others. San Francisco will soon have close to 1,000 homeless people in hotel rooms. Some local leaders are calling for rooms for all 8,000 homeless in the city. Advocates in Los Angeles County are calling for at least 15,000 hotel rooms for the 60,000 people homeless there. But even more than that, than hotel rooms, they admit they are using the current crisis to push for much more homeless assistance.
Now, that's no surprise. The liberals in those cities are saying we need hotel space. And now we need to do extra things. We need more money, more money, more money. And the question is, who's paying for these hotel rooms at this point? Back to the report.
The cost will be shared between counties and federal taxpayers through FEMA reimbursements for up to 75% of hotel leasing costs. It will be hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 3 months. But there's already focus on what happens after that. The mayor of Los Angeles and others say we can't return to the status quo, and they want this federal funding to continue.
And in the midst of all this, we've had reports previously, like in San Francisco, there were cases where drugs and alcohol were being supplied to those homeless in those hotel rooms because they did not want them to leave the hotel room. They're trying to keep them socially distanced. Well, if you don't give me my drugs and my alcohol, I got to go out and get some. So there were actual provisions to provide drugs and alcohol so they would stay put. Gavin Newsom said the Motel 6 hotel chain was providing something like 5,000 hotel rooms at 47 locations in 19 counties in his state. And you heard how it was going to be paid for. And they were also threatening cities, if you don't provide us some hotel rooms, we will commandeer them. And then the situation in San Francisco, how's it been since they started doing this, in addition to supplying drugs and so forth? Well, they... City Journal contributor was on Tucker Carlson last night, and he says housing thousands of homeless in San Francisco empty hotels to slow the spread of coronavirus has been, quote, an absolute disaster. He said it's solving exactly nothing. As a matter of fact, it's making all the problems worse, and says the scene inside the hotels is as bad as you can imagine. She says you are talking drug-fueled parties, overdoses, deaths, people being assaulted. You have sexual assaults going on. It's pandemonium, extremely bad. It needs to stop. Well, they're not. They're not. Those assigned are disaster workers, and some of them had previously been librarians. Now they're becoming paper pushers and administrators and making sure the homeless stay in their room. We'll bring the alcohol and drugs to you. They have a plan. Right. Some closing points on that when we continue.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So as we were sharing with you in the previous segment, what's happening with homeless in some of the liberal cities, and because of the coronavirus in particular, where they're putting them in hotels that have been vacant because a lot of folks were not using the hotels. But they had actually started doing some of that even before the COVID-19 really began to spread rapidly. And in fact, it was in April. The L.A. Governor Newsom had said we had now 15,000 hotel rooms to shelter homeless people. 15,000 rooms. And you heard that the federal government was going to be paying 75% of the cost through FEMA. And, of course, if there are any COVID tests, that they'll be dealing with that as well. But it was also looking at what had already happened in San Francisco as they began to try to get folks off the street and put them in hotels to stop the spread. It didn't take long before the word came out that, yeah, drugs were being given to these homeless addicts in the hotel so they would not leave the hotel. In fact, a former addict had called attention to it when he tweeted out that formerly homeless addict in recovery advocating for the truth about homelessness and drug addiction. I just found out that homeless placed in hotels in San Fran are being delivered alcohol, weed, and methadone because they identified as an addict, alcoholic. They're getting it for free. You're supposed to be offering treatment. This is enabling, wrong on so many levels. The city health department, by the way, back in May in San Francisco, confirmed that that's what we're doing. But they insisted, no, we're not paying for the, using taxpayer money to actually pay for the alcohol or the drugs. But we do believe to have these guests successfully complete isolation and quarantine, they need to stay in their rooms. So they were allowing drugs and alcohol to be delivered. Is that a policy? I mean, it is a policy. It's what exactly what they were doing. Does that sound like anything that would make sense? For liberals, I guess so. And if you're a homeless person, hey, I don't have to worry about finding drugs or alcohol anymore. Just put me in a hotel room and it's better than room service. Because I don't have to pay for anything. Give me a mini bar. Give me several while you're at it. And this San Francisco reporter that was on Tucker Carlson last night talking about the investigation that she took on some of these hotel rooms and how it's going, the Hotels for Homeless program. She said those assigned as disaster workers, they've been librarians. They're just paper pushers, administrators reassigned to these hotels, and what they're telling me is beyond the pale. They're not just horrified, they're traumatized by what they see. Mattresses with feces on them, blood, hospital bands on the floor. What people are seeing is so horrible, they walk out and say, I don't want to go back in there. And this reporter, Erica Sandberg, said city officials, quote, are trying to put this kind of a Band-Aid on it, pretend it's not happening. But it's happening, and it's worse than people imagine. Look, Christ has said we will always have the poor among us. But that doesn't mean we turn and not help them, do what we can. And who knows, but by fate or whatever, you could be in the shoes of some of those that we're discussing now in these hotel rooms. Some may have had great lives and futures ahead of them, and then something went upside down. Economy, divorce, got too deep into alcohol, drugs. Not making excuses, just dealing with the fact. I do think that we need to keep in mind the need that exists out there and that we keep them in your prayers, and certainly where they can get help, we need to do so. But policies like this don't help anything. They do just put a Band-Aid on an open wound. And I would like to see someone out there who would tell me, yeah, this is good, and here's what the end game is. There is no end game. You're going to have to move them out of the hotels at some point, or you can just let them take it over. You're going to commandeer the entire hotel chain and all the rooms, and do you think anyone else wants to stay in the hotel if not even all the rooms are being used by the homeless and drug addicts and so forth? Do you think any hotel will have other guests coming in? I'm going to try to book for tomorrow, this same time frame for tomorrow, James Herson from the West Coast. We have him on many times, international lawyer, has a lot to say about culture and issues and so forth. I want to get his take on some of these latest things involving San Francisco. And, of course, we'll also talk about the city of Berkeley, who's decided we don't need police to stop cars for traffic stops. We'll just have civilians stop them. Unfortunately, we will then see a civilian gunned down, as we've already seen police officers shot. Back tomorrow. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.